Welcome to The Voice of Oregon's Workers, a monthly podcast from the Oregon AFL-CIO, where we highlight the people and organizations who are changing what it means for workers to stand together and build power. I'm Russell Sanders, and it's my honor to serve as Communications Director at the Oregon AFL-CIO. Our guest this month is our own Tom Chamberlain, who for 14 years has led our state federation as our president. Tom is a retired firefighter and one of the toughest advocates for workers that I've ever met. In a few weeks, at the 56th Biennial Convention of the Oregon AFL-CIO, Tom will retire from his position as our president, along with Barbara Bird, our secretary-treasurer. We're going to talk about his time at the helm of our organization and what he hopes to see from tomorrow's labor movement. Tom, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for sitting down this month. So tell us, how did you become president? How did your career lead you here?
Well, I had that question asked to me when I was on a panel the other day, and someone asked, how did you prepare yourself? Well, the truth is, I didn't. 14 years ago, when I stood in front of the convention and took the oath of office, I was the most unlikely state Fed president in the country. I was nominated to my executive board mainly because I didn't show up for union meetings. I never went to union meetings. I paid my dues, and I thought other folks would take care of it. But two retiring members of the executive board talked to me and convinced me to run. I became secretary, treasurer, and president. And then I lost one of my reelection bids for president, and the governor hired me as a senior policy advisor. And I wasn't in that position very long where I discovered a couple things. One, I'm not a policy wonk. And two, I'm a laborer. I'm a union activist.
Sure.
That's what I am. And when you're a union activist, you know, there aren't a lot of gray lines. You're either with workers, and then you're my friends and allies, or you're against workers, and you're my enemy. Now, that sounds a little harsh, but the reality is for today's worker is harsh. And after I was in the governor's office, I was actually looking for an exit strategy. I was asked to run for the Oregon AFL-CIO.
Great. So in your time here at the Oregon AFL-CIO, what do you think has been our organization's most important accomplishment? What do you look back on with the most pride?
I believe that structures of organizations make or break an organization. And before I got here in 2002 or three, we went through a program called New Alliance. And New Alliance changed the composition of our executive board from regional representation to the largest unions and focusing on presidents and EDs. That has allowed our state Fed to go directly to our affiliate leaders, get buy-in and input on new programs. So structure piece, I think that was extremely important. What I'm most proud of is a restructuring of the AFL-CIO, where we made chapters from CLCs, where we were able to fund three regional people in Bend, Eugene, and Medford. What that has happened is it adds great value to our affiliates. When AFSCME went out on strike at Lane County, we turned over our regional staff, who not only assisted with their events, but was coordinating community groups to get support for the strike. When machinists in Klamath Falls were in need of an organizer, guess what? Our Medford person is an organizer, and we turned her over to that campaign. And stories also in Bend, where they've supported actions at the hospital there for both nurses and OFNHP. It's really important. And I believe that over the last 14 years with leader support, we've become a different AFL-CIO that really focuses on how do we add value to our affiliates. Let's face it. We're here for the affiliate. We're only here because the affiliates want us to be here, and our programs have to reflect that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. I think just from working here, since 2010 with you, the development of that regional program has just been huge. Our ability to get things like earned media stories out in the regions has expanded greatly, and it's just fantastic to see, you know, the affiliates coming together in those regions. One of our focuses here at the State Fed has been expanding unions' advocacy for immigrants, the LGBTQ plus community, and other minority communities. Why has this been an important goal for you?
When I became a firefighter and was elected to the executive board, the vision of what workers' issues are or were wages, hours, and working conditions. Now, there's a problem with that because almost everything that you just went over are worker issues. Our members come in all shapes and sizes and colors. It's such a diverse movement, and we have to be welcoming in that movement. And what we've been able to do, because we have leaders on our executive board, we've been able to have discussions. We've been able to develop programs. At every one of our events, whether it's an organizing conference or a convention, we will focus on one piece of diversity, gender and racial justice, LGBTQ, and on this convention, there'll be a big emphasis on women's issues, where we'll have a panel. It's a follow-up from our last convention, a Me Too panel. We'll also have a panel on transgender issues to help educate our folks, because I believe education with union members is key to changing attitudes.
Absolutely. Do you think Oregon's unions have been receptive of these changes for the most part?
You know, it varies from union to union, but I will say this, even our most conservative unions, because there's been this constant drumbeat, they're not in the same place they were 14 years ago.
Sure. That's fascinating. What do you attribute that to? How has that change, that slow, gradual change, kind of rolled out?
Well, first of all, if you're running the Federation, you have to have the support of your affiliates. And one thing I have done is I go out and I meet with all my executive board members and affiliates at least once a year, sometimes twice a year, sometimes three. But by having that face-to-face, going to their office and having a discussion builds trust. And if your affiliates trust in your federation, they allow you with their input in developing these programs. So I think the programs, the ongoing communications, and how we conduct our conferences and events through the lens of racial justice and equity really has made a difference.
That's great. How has the union movement changed in the last 14 years? What have been the major shifts that you've seen?
One is, as union density has gone down, what you've seen is bigger and broader comprehensive political programs. Thinking about, in the private sector, 9% of the workforce. In Oregon, union density somewhere around 15%, which sounds a lot, but it used to be above 30. As we've lost members, we've increased our focus on political programs and built power for workers through that program. You can't, with our union density at 50%, it's really hard for us to hit industry standards like we used to have when we had 33%.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned that the rate of union density has decreased overall. I mean, we've seen that graph that's at every event, every presentation, of union density going down while workers' prosperity goes down as well. How do you see us bringing that number back up in the coming years? What can unions do today to build new members and maybe even appeal to folks who traditionally avoid unions?
Well, I think this latest polling that came out, and I think it was the last three pollings, the support for unions is above 60%, and the last one was between 64 and 65. I believe that is occurring because of the actions that non-union workers are seeing in the streets. When AFSCME took their strike vote and had huge demonstrations and great solidarity, they had 1,500 people at one event, and then get a good contract because they mobilized, that shows other workers that there is hope, that there is power. When you see UFCW focusing on the Fix the Gap campaign to make sure that there's equity in the workplace. And that campaign's about women being underpaid by $3.70 an hour, less than their male counterparts. That type of fight really broadens our appeal. The other thing is, when you look at what the AFL-CIO has supported over the last 14 years, you know, workplace safety, minimum wage, gender justice, increasing the statute of limitations for sexual harassment on the jobs, I believe that workers, non-union workers in particular, see that and go, hey, this isn't the same union movement that only looks inward but looks outward.
Yeah, that kind of repositioning and being, you know, like our motto, a strong voice for all workers, I think that's important. What changes have you implemented in your time here as to how the Oregon AFL-CIO approaches union organizing?
Well, I'm proud to say that the Oregon AFL-CIO was the first state, fed, in the country to develop an organizing program. What's interesting about the organizing program is the first time we tried it, we failed. It was too big. We had too many people there. It just did not work. The second time we did it in 2012 or 13, we brought in help from the National AFL-CIO, and we started with a small group of executive directors and organizing directors from our affiliates, those affiliates that actually had the resources to do organizing. From there, we developed an organizing program. We have a full-time organizer on staff that augments organizing drives like UFCW's Safeway and Albertsons drive, supported AFSCME and Behavioral Health. We've ran successfully two campaigns on our own to organize workers for OSEA and ATU. But when you go out and talk to affiliate leaders about organizing and talk about our program, what they value the most is the ability to get research done quickly. They all have national researchers, right? But they get in line. Here, they're at the front of the line, and we can make things happen. The other thing that I find exciting and taxing is the looking at Uber and Lyft, how we can build power for those drivers. And we've been very successful doing that at Portland, where we're implementing a wage boards that will give drivers, they can talk about how much their wages are. They can talk about their working conditions. They can talk about grievances. So I'm excited about that and see how all that's coming together.
That's fantastic. Yeah. The Uber and Lyft stuff is especially exciting because that's a group of people who, you know, they don't have the National Labor Relations Act behind their back. You got to get creative with that type of organizing for sure. How have you seen the Oregon AFL-CIO's approach to politics and legislation change? I know there's some state federations that's what they do is politics and legislation. Here in Oregon, it seems like we take on, you know, more and more each time. How's that changed in your time here?
Well, we've always had the concept that each program is tied to the others. For example, politics can be tied to almost anything, but I'm going to give you an example of what a strong political program can accomplish. When Unite Here wanted to get a neutrality agreement that included card check and binding arbitration for first contracts, we were able to use our political muscle and working with four government entities, because that headquarters hotel by the convention center, we had to work, I said four, it was three. We had to work with the city of Portland. We had to work with Metro and Multnomah County.
Wow.
And we were able to get in the RFP that the developer or operator would have to have a harmony agreement. when Hyatt came in and wanted to sign the contract with the government entities prior to that happening, we were able to educate folks, and they positioned themselves against that, and they stopped it until Unite Here was able to negotiate what they needed. The proposed baseball stadium, whether we get baseball or not, and I'm very hopeful that we do, the folks who build that stadium and the people who operate, have jobs inside the stadium, will all be union. This is a phenomenal accomplishment because what we found is no other agreement has happened this early in the process.
Wow.
But we wanted to ensure that it happened. So I'm pretty excited about that. We announced it in late July, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, indeed. Hopefully baseball comes here to the Rose City. Jumping back to how you got to be State Fed president, how did your experience as a firefighter and a union fire station prepare you to be the president of the Oregon AFL-CIO?
That's a really good question. when you're campaigning or you're briefing your membership, especially firefighters, you actually have to go where they live. So you would go into an engine house that has 4 to 10, in some cases 14 people, and they're all listening to you. They call everybody in the room, and then they start firing questions at you quickly. And since they know you, if they don't think you're answering the question, they'll hold you accountable. And that allowed me to think pretty fast on my feet.
Mm-hmm.
And invaluable.
Yeah.
The other firefighter tendencies that can be really great for a leader or really bad for a leader, it just depends on the timing, is if you're a firefighter and you're in an emergency, you make decisions really quickly. You don't have time to overthink anything. You don't have time to confer with folks except those people on your team who's going to put up a ladder or advance a hose line into a fire, extract a victim. Seconds matter. So the ability to make quick decisions is extremely important for a firefighter. I think it's really important for leaders to also do that, to be able to evaluate a situation and then make a decision. The downside to that is sometimes you make those decisions too quickly. Sometimes you don't include all the people you need to include. And while that has been a struggle for me, I have learned the value of checking in with my affiliates, and sometimes I overdo it, but I just have to make sure that they're with me.
Yeah, absolutely. What are your hopes for the 2020 election? What are you hoping to see happen in Oregon and nationally?
Well, in Oregon, I hope that we defeat some of the Democrats that promised us that they wouldn't touch PERS. Many are labor people from various unions. I find what happened at PERS to be unforgivable. And if you look at our members, they're pretty upset, whether it's firefighters or AFSCME. Building trades did not have a great session. UFCW didn't have a great session. And while there were some very good things that came out of that legislative session, there were enough defeats that we have to send a strong, clear message. It's also a great lesson about political parties and what happens when you just support people who have D by their name. We are not a political party. We are the union movement. Our job is to reflect the needs and wants of all workers. And that doesn't translate very well in the legislative process, especially when you have so-called friends who don't stand up with you. So my hope is that we maintain our majorities, but the composition of the legislature looks different. On a national scale, I want the trifecta. I want a labor-friendly president, not labor-friendly, a labor supporter.
Yeah.
There's a big difference. It's one thing to say, I'm going to sign comprehensive labor reform if it gets to my desk, versus someone who's going out there and pounding the table and getting the votes we need,
mm-hmm.
like President Obama did on his trade agreement, the fast-track part of it. And of course, the Senate and the House. I think what will have to happen in the United States Senate is to do away with the filibuster and move comprehensive labor reform first thing.
Day one.
Don't make us wait like you did in 2008 on the Employee Free Choice Act.
Yeah, that's crucial. I mean, all the erosions of rights we've seen since Trump took office, it's just, yeah, we got to do something here in 2020 for sure. So we're going to start kind of wrapping up and talking about your hopes for the future of Oregon's unions. What do you hope to see from Oregon's unions in the future?
I hope that they have the ability to look at programs and policies that we have in effect now and constantly evaluate them. Are these programs meeting the needs of workers?
Mm-hmm.
And if they're not, get rid of it. Do something else. What creates a vibrant movement is constantly changing to meet the needs of the workers in the workplace. I would love to see that in 2020 we go through a process like we went through in 2009 and 21, and that is prepare for comprehensive labor reform. What we did in 2008, we created the organizing committee. In 2008, we did polling to find what resonated with workers, and it made a big difference. We rebranded. We started doing things different, but you constantly have to do check-ins like that, especially when we're pushing for a comprehensive labor reform. And what I'm talking about is doing away with Taft-Hartley. Wow. That's a proposal on the table. If we do away with Taft-Hartley, secondary boycotts are back on the table. If we do away with Taft-Hartley, employers can no longer hold captive meetings and scare the hell out of workers who want to organize. And organizing through card check, unless both organizations, the employer and the employees union, agree to it, which we won't, you'll see a big uptick in organizing. So we have to maintain a very strong and united union movement here at the Fed. We have to not be afraid of failing, and we have to prepare ourselves for whatever major issue comes down the pike. Look, we're the union movement. We don't run from a crisis. We run to the crisis, because if we don't, who's going to represent the workers? That's our job.
That's right. So speaking of running to the crisis, what's been your favorite campaign or fight that we've gotten into the past 14 years?
Well, two of them. The Employee Free Choice Act united the union movement like never before. And we mobilized like never before. There are great lessons to be learned from that. But that was an exciting time. And it brought the union movement together. The other is our trade fight, where we mobilized hundreds, thousands of people, where we made things so hot for the trade debate and our congressional delegates who were voting for it, that President Obama actually came to Portland and had a big rally at Nike. And we had 1,000 people out in front of that hotel voicing our displeasure. Whenever you can organize like that and mobilize your membership, whatever that might be, I find extremely exciting. And the third, we elected Jeff Merkley to the United States Senate. Everyone told us we couldn't do it. We put our shoulder to the wheel, made sure he got out of the primary, and then elected. I can't tell you how many national affiliate leaders have thanked us for getting Jeff Merkley elected.
That's fantastic. Yeah, he's certainly been a just steady advocate for workers his whole time in Washington, D.C. All right, last question here. What advice would you give to a young worker who's interested in getting involved in Oregon's union movement?
Step up.
Step up to the plate.
Yeah, don't be like me and not go to union meetings. You know, go to union meetings. If you want to advance, go to some volunteer events. Take classes to prepare yourself. When I became Secretary Treasurer of the Portland Firefighters, I actually went and took accounting classes and how to use spreadsheets. And, you know, I had the job. I had to prepare myself for it. So be open to any education opportunities you may get through your union.
Yeah, that's all good advice. I mean, You know, corporate America has their seminars and their masters in business administration, things like that. Union members need to take advantage of trainings that provided through their own local or through another organization and get involved.
Can I add one more thing?
You sure can.
I think it's also important, if you're a union member and you want to get involved, I think the first thing I'd do is make an appointment with your union president or ED or business manager and sit down and talk about it. What are their ideas about how to prepare yourself? Very few presidents may make issue with that. In other words, are you running for my job? The vast majority of affiliate leaders I know would not only welcome such an opportunity, they would enjoy it.
Yeah, that's definitely good advice. I mean, you see that time and time again, that the weak link in the union is member participation, people getting involved, putting their hand up and saying, what can I do to help? Thank you so much for sitting down with us today, Tom, and talking about your career here at the Oregon AFL-CIO and the legacy you've left behind for Oregon's union movement. You've been listening to The Voice of Oregon's Workers, monthly podcast from the Oregon AFL-CIO. If you like what you heard today, please check us out on Apple, iTunes, on Stitcher, on Spotify. We're on all the major services. And make sure to subscribe, share us with your friends and family, and leave a positive review. Thank you so much for listening.